Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. We are 3 weeks and a day from Election Day. We're looking ahead to the last presidential debate on Wednesday. And last week was a week, I submit, like no other in the presidential campaign. Who better to talk to than the political junkie Ken Rudin, who is with us from California this morning. Welcome, Ken. Good to have you on the show.
Is it November 8th yet?
It is not. You're in la-la land out there. No wonder you've lost track of the dates.
I've lost track because I'm still replaying last week's debate over and over in my mind.
Let me put the phone number out and invite some questions for you. 651-227-6000 to talk to Ken about the candidates, the campaigns, the upcoming debate. 800-242-2828. You can tweet me a question, too, if you like, at Carrie NPR. Ken, would you concur? Do you have a hard time thinking of a week in a presidential campaign that looks like what happened last week?
Well, I think I've said that for like 56 weeks in a row. Every time I think I've seen everything, I think I've seen things that I never would imagine before. Then something else crazy happens. But the last week, you're absolutely the most surreal I can remember ever. I mean, maybe, you know, Garfield and Hayes was a tough, you know, and those races in the 1800s, which I was so young then. But this one is just beyond.
Yeah. And do you say that because it was this avalanche of these accounts of everything from sexual assault to harassment from Donald Trump? And charges like that simply aren't usually leveled at a presidential campaign or candidate.
Well, in fairness, there was the accusations against Bill Clinton heading into New Hampshire. I think one of the reasons Bill Clinton, who finished second in New Hampshire, called himself the comeback kid is because he was under assault from these accusations from women that, you know, that is not too dissimilar for what Donald Trump is doing. But basically, it's even more than the accusations because, you know, Clinton not only was met with it, faced it, but somehow survived. Donald Trump doesn't seem likely to survive because there's much more to Donald Trump than the bragging of sexual assault of women. First of all, there's a difference between affairs and assault, and we don't have to get into that debate right now. But it's more than that. It's just demeaning of women and minorities and handicapped and has split both parties. And it seems like Donald Trump is fighting as much against crooked Hillary and foreign Obama as much as he is with the Republicans, because the Republicans, left and right, mostly right and right, have many of them have unendorsed him or distanced themselves from Trump since that video was released.
I think what I've never seen, which is so disorienting, is the absence of shame or contrition. I know he's denying a lot of these accounts, but he simply couldn't deny the voice on the tape because, you know, that was his voice. I've just never seen somebody so baldly incontrite and unashamed.
Well, that words is the way I feel, but there are other people who say that he tells it like it is, and he's not part of, you know, he's not part of the politics as usual as we've seen in the past. Look, he's never apologized. Every time he makes a remark about the Khan family or about Megyn Kelly or about the disabled New York Times reporter, he'll either or the fact that Ted Cruz's father worked with Lee Harvey Oswald. I mean, some of the things are just beyond.
Right.
And there's no apology. There's just, you know, just and then, of course, when especially in the advent of the aftermath of the tape with Billy Bush, he'll say, well, Bill Clinton was worse. And then he'll bring these women, the Paula Jones and the Juanita Brodericks to the debate stage. It's insulting Jerry Springer, because I thought Jerry Springer, I mean, it's beyond Jerry Springer. It's beyond. Now he says for Wednesday's debate, he's going to be all the shackles are off, all the restraints are off. You mean he was restrained last debate? My goodness.
Yeah. So Ken, you'll recognize this voice, but I want to play because this was, I think, one of the I don't know, maybe transformative moments from last week's politics. Listen to this.
Because this was not just a lewd conversation. This wasn't just locker room banter. This was a powerful individual speaking freely and openly about sexually predatory behavior. and actually bragging about kissing and groping women, using language so obscene that many of us were worried about our children hearing it when we turn on the TV.
Will you talk about that moment last week?
I think that's it's a major moment. That was the First Lady of the United States.
Right.
And she has talked about what many women feel. I mean, it's rightly so. Of course, men feel it too. But it's one thing for Donald Trump to say this never happened, and they're lying, and they're paid for by the Hillary Clinton campaign. And there are other women who have obviously gone through unwanted sexual advances and lewd behavior, and not everybody reports it. So I kind of think that it is a watershed moment in the sense that we're not only are we being faced, we women are being faced with something that we've seen for much of our lives in many cases, but this is somebody who's saying that I want to be your next president of the United States. So when all these women, these subsequent women, have come forward, some people say, well, you know, this is not a coincidence. This is an organized attempt by the Clinton campaign to destroy his reputation. But it's women who say, look, you know, I've seen this my whole life, and I'm just not going to take it any longer. And I think Michelle Obama verbalized it better than anybody could have.
A call for you, Ken, here from Audrey in Minneapolis. Hey, Audrey. Hi. What do you want to know from Ken?
Yeah, hi, Ken and Carrie. I, of course, like everybody else, have never seen a presidential candidate like this one. And now he's also saying that the whole thing's rigged. And nationally, rigging an election is nigh on impossible because it's all run at the county and state level. But having said that, it seems to me he's going around now. And, of course, I believe he's going to lose. And I think he's going to lose, to use his word, bigly. that he is spewing all sorts of venom and hatred, and people who are his core followers are believing every word that he says. And I'm very kind of anxious to see that once he loses on November 9th and afterwards, what's going to happen with Donald Trump and all of those supporters who he has them, you know, up to a kind of some kind of a frenzy about this is rigged, this
okay.
is all against me.
So, Audrey, because I'm a little short on time, I'll put your question to Ken. It's a good one.
It's a great one. It's a great one. And the real question is, exactly, it may not be November 8th, it may be November 9th. And the question is, when he's saying it's rigged and they're stealing it from him, when he says to his supporters, go vote and then go around to different precincts where they're likely to steal votes. I mean, we know what kind of precincts he's talking about. We know what kind of neighborhoods he's talking about. He's basically not only delegitimizing the entire system, but putting fear and doubt into his supporters' minds, and there are a lot of supporters. Let's not kid ourselves. I mean, this is not a fringe candidate. This is a serious candidate with 40 to 48% of the vote, for all we know. It's serious, and of course, when you put doubt in an institution like our voting system, you put questions about the whole system, and then you know, not only may there not be an acceptance, I mean a concession speech from Donald Trump, there may not be a concession acknowledgement from his millions of supporters, and that will just go on through the aftermath of the election into the inauguration and into the first couple of years.
You know, Ken, I feel like I've been listening to this discussion over the last few days since he's really gotten overt about this. I feel like this delegitimizing the president, I mean, this is not brand new to Donald Trump. That's what the birther stuff, and he was at the forefront of the birther stuff, but there were plenty of Republicans who were not as overt as he's been about it, but who played along, who kind of went, well, let's just see what happens with this. This is not the first time we've seen an effort to do this.
No, and that's an interesting point, and that's what I think the Republican Party is having to face in these 3 weeks plus one day to go before the election, because we saw in the past week, in the last 7 days or so, a sizable number of Republicans who have either withdrawn their endorsement or say they won't campaign with him. Everybody from Rob Portman in Ohio to Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House. But there are also many Democrats who say, oh, look, a lot of this venom has been coming out for months now, and only now have these Republicans distanced themselves from it. So I've never seen a candidate like this. but I've never seen a party so torn about their presidential nominee. Look, not everybody, not every Republican loved Barry Goldwater in 1964, but the party survived it, even though he got wiped out in 64 by Lyndon Johnson. The party wound up winning 47 House seats 2 years later and elected Richard Nixon 2 years after that. I don't know what the future of the party is going to be after November 8th, because you have a candidate who has as much contempt for his own party as he does the Democrats.
I want to talk to you about the Senate races, Ken. And as it happens, you're in California. You're in Sonoma this morning, right?
Yeah, bummer, huh?
So, yeah, what a drag.
Yeah.
So there's a big Senate race in California, but I heard a story a couple days ago that many Californians are really disengaged from this.
Well, they are disengaged because California has this very weird, I'm not a big fan of it, but a system where the top two vote getters in the primary, regardless of party, advance to the general election in November. So as it turned out, the top two vote getters for the Senate in California were both Democrats, Kamala Harris, the Attorney General, and Loretta Sanchez, a congresswoman. And so there are two Democrats. So a lot of Republicans, you know, first of all, are probably going to sit home for the Senate race, not vote at all. Why should they? And to be honest with you, Kamala Harris, who is, you know, the choice of the Democratic establishment, she's not been a sterling campaigner. She doesn't.
Oh,
she's
really?
Kind of, she's kind of. I mean, a lot of the criticism we heard about Hillary Clinton, that she was just unwilling to. She was very cautious. She was very careful. Kamala Harris is a good candidate, but very cautious, very careful. I mean, I'm not questioning her positions, her views, but she's not dynamic. She's not bold. She's not taking chances. And this is, you know, you're going to see a very low turnout in California, I suspect. Certainly, there's no reason for Republicans to come out. And that's what the Republicans are also torn about, because even if they feel that the White House, the presidency is gone, there are many Republicans, like the Bush family, like the Koch brothers, like others, and like Paul Ryan, who say that if Hillary Clinton is the president, we've got to stop her from getting a rubber-stamp Congress, and they're going all out to make sure that the Republicans maintain the control of the House and Senate.
So three more states here, Ken, as we finish up here. Wisconsin, how's it looking for Ron Johnson there, the Republican incumbent?
I think he's
gone.
He's trailing Russ Feingold, the former senator. Ron Johnson has not led in any poll, and I see no reason why Russ Feingold doesn't get returned to the Senate.
Kelly Ayotte in New Hampshire. She's
that
the
is dead
Republican
even,
incumbent.
One of the things that's hurting Kelly Ayotte, who's a rising star in the Republican Party, is her ambivalence about Donald Trump. And every time she says, I don't know, the Trump supporters say, okay, you don't know? Well, we may not vote for you. Kelly Ayotte is running against a popular governor, another woman, Maggie Hassan. That's a tough race. That's one to watch, absolutely.
And Nevada, where the debate will be.
I think it's the best chance, the only chance for a Republican pickup. Joe Heck is the congressman there. He's running against the choice of Harry Reid as a former state attorney general, Catherine Cortez Masto. But the problem for Joe Heck is that he's also withdrawn his endorsement of Trump, and many Trump supporters may return the favor on November 8th.
And what are you watching for in the debate that will be held in Las Vegas?
I shouldn't recommend this, but I'm probably going to drink heavily before the debate and during the debate. It's so disheartening.
Oh, I can't wait to see what you're saying on Twitter.
Oh, God. Oh, I am out of control on Twitter. But the campaign is out of control. I didn't want to get on your show, Kerry, and just bash a presidential candidate. But I have deep respect for civility and integrity and the history of our this voting system, and somebody who just puts it all into question I've just never seen anything like it before.
Ken, I'll talk to you Monday. Thank you.
Thank you for leaving me so depressed, Kerry. Bye.
Big sigh there. Ken Rudin, the political junkie, with us as always on Monday. Chris Farrell in the studio with me this morning. I want to pick up, Chris, on what Ken said about civility and integrity. I think that's something that we all have expectations around for the presidential campaign and the way that we will cover, especially we here in public media, will cover that. This has presented us with some challenges.
some real challenges. And I think Minnesota Public Radio, I think you, I think public radio in general, when you listen to it, has elevated the level of overall discourse.
I hope so, because it's been a challenge.
Well, as part of my job, I also have to watch what's being discussed on cable.
Right.
And I think what's happening on cable is absolutely a disgrace. And it doesn't matter what your political persuasion is. You can sort of look at it and say there's much more of a ratings game, much
right.
more of a shallow analysis. But as Ken was saying, we're now in a different period because this is descending into something that we've not seen. And, you know, it all sounds nice to talk about civility, but civility actually is an important glue in a democracy, is that people can disagree. But at its core, as Edmund Burke said, at its core, democracy is about compromise. It's about at the end of the day, you're kind of figuring out this person's not evil, this person is not bad. We can sort of advance things, giving up a little bit here, giving up a little bit there. And this current conversation is descending into something where it's absolutist. It has violent tendencies. It has stereotypes that are extremely disturbing. And so this is why the conversation, this is the challenge that you face
right.
constantly, public radio faces, the media faces, in terms of how do you have a discussion which sort of says we're going to have an election, we have a vote, we'd like to be putting out sort of balanced positions, or at least, you know, put out what the positions are.
And informed.
And informed, and it's becoming increasingly difficult.
It is. It is. I have to say, as with what Chris is adding here, it is hard to break through the level of the noise and the tone of the noise to have the kind of conversations that I think we in public radio want to have.